Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Unlimited Realities. I am your host, Lisa Zimmer, and today I'm really happy to bring on best-selling author Oriah Mountain Dreamer to talk to us a little bit today about summer solstice, which is coming up on the 21st of June, and really what the summer solstice represents and how we can incorporate it into our lives for, you know, more of a grounding and more of a focus in regard to our priorities. So, Oriah, thank you so very much for being on Unlimited Realities today. Welcome.
My pleasure. Happy to be here, Lisa.
Thank you. Thank you. And, you know, last time we spoke, you were on back in December, and we spoke about the winter solstice. And I had people just loved knowing and hearing that show. And so I'm really happy to bring the listeners today your wisdom in regard to the summer solstice and everything else you can enlighten us on today. So thank you so much for being here. And let's talk about what summer solstice is, because we're moving into kind of I'm moving into a slower pace and taking advantage of summer and time off with the kids and kind of arranging my schedule. But what is the summer solstice in regard to us?
Well, it is the time of the longest day and the shortest night. So it's the time of the longest light that's with us. And it always strikes me as interesting in North America, and particularly, in the Northern Hemisphere, especially in regions unlike Florida where we get a lot of snow and whatnot, of course, we tend to take some time in the summer to try to slow down. And in some ways, which is wonderful, always wonderful to do that. But it's also happening at a time when a natural cycle, in a sense, is blooming, is really, I for the last 10 years have lived most of the time in a farming community where, of course, this becomes their busiest time of year because there are, you know, everything is growing and there'll be repeated harvests and seeding and all that kind of stuff. So it's interesting to me that culturally, we do this kind of taking of time off, in a sense, of our usual work, which makes great sense, especially here in Canada where summer is short. But at the same time, there's all this kind of energy available of long days, of lots of light, of lots of warmth, all kinds of good things like that. So it is... it's also a kind of a kind of outward turned energy, where we kind of go into the world and see what we want to do with that energy.
And you know, speaking of energy, we just got through the eclipse yesterday, and that was the second in regard to the June 1st eclipse, and the energy is buzzing. I mean, I can feel the energy. You know, days before the eclipse, and people are either really focused or really freaking out, and and so it really felt like I could feel the balloon expand yesterday and then pop, and it was really a blessing for the pop, and starting to feel that release and the energy. I do feel that shift. I do feel us coming into the summer solstice with kind of a new charge, kind of a you know, for me, it's kind of a reflective perspective. It's kind of like, okay, what's important and where do I want to put my energy and what can I let slack right now that's really not going to come back and slam me in the face? Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm looking at, and the kids being home, of course, that's my priority. So I want to play. So, you know, I'm definitely focusing on that. In fact, we're taking a road trip as soon as the show's over today. So, you know, how can we incorporate this light into our lives? I know some, like there's Aztec and shamanic rituals that people sometimes, you know, gather up little kind of like little medicine bags and offer them to, you know, in sacred circle in regard to summer solstice. Are there different ways that we can honor summer solstice in where we feel, you know, more of the power and the energy that the earth and nature and God is providing us right now?
Yes, absolutely. And Mostly that's about how you, I mean, and the how here has to do with what kind of tradition you come from and how you want to symbolically participate, in a sense. And I say symbolically, not meaning, you know, versus any real. I mean really focusing and honing intent and participation in the energy with the use of symbols. That's what we do, where human beings are symbol makers, you know. We create symbols that hold for us a certain kind of energy that helps bring to consciousness what we want to do deliberately. You know, and one of the lovely things about the solstices is this a constant sense of movement. So, you know, in the winter solstice, we go through this longest night in this inward turning. But as it's happening, it's immediately then moving into a beginning of the return of the light. So there's a promise there. And, of course, the reverse happens here. We're coming up to this time of the greatest light, the longest day, and instantly as we move through that, we begin to move back toward the darkness again. The days start to get shorter after June 21st. So for me, that's all just about, you know, that sort of phrase of this too will pass applies equally to everything. It applies to the ecstatic moment. It applies to the moment of despair, that there is this constant motion. There is no stopping that. That's nature, and we're as much a part of nature as everything else. There's no holding on, because I suspect that many of us would, you know, take great consolation in that movement when it's the winter solstice, but there might be a little bit of a wanting to hold on to the light of the summer solstice. but, you know, light and dark both have their gifts, and you don't get one without the other, kind of thing. And, you know, darkness is the place of fertility. It's the place where the seed really dies. You know, the outer shell rots, dies, it splits open, and then you get the shoot. And then it climbs towards this light that we're now moving in, and it blooms. So the summer solstice is often associated in terms of ceremonial terms with lots of greenery, lots of flowers, lots of what blooms. And again, it brings to mind, you know, in certain Buddhist circles, there will often be on the altar always fresh-cut flowers as a reminder both of beauty but also fragility and how quickly things die. They change constantly. There's no hanging on. So I mention that because I think sometimes that's the challenge of the summer solstice, is not to try and grab something and hang on. Because
movement's
the only constant here, right? But the thing that fascinates me most is if you assume that there's an availability of energy. Then there's always, you know, a constant assumption in our culture especially that we don't have enough energy, which could mean we don't have enough time, we don't have enough physical energy, we don't have enough money, we don't have enough space, all of these just forms of energy, right?
Okay.
And I have, you know, I've had chronic fatigue syndrome, so I'm highly appreciative of the need for energy. But one of the things I look at all the time is, in my own life even, is when I get a little bit of energy, more than, say, my usual, what do I do with it? I'm somewhat mortified to discover that some of the times I appear to just sort of throw it away to whatever happens to cross my path next. You know, I have a day that has a bit more energy, and something crosses my path, and which may be a request from somebody, or and it may be, you know, will you participate in this or whatever, and it may be good stuff, but I... with that little bit of energy, I seem to be overly eager to just give it to whatever crosses my path without necessarily discerning whether or not this is the way I want to use this. Now, one of the gifts of chronic fatigue is you become really aware of where your energy level is at. And I once had somebody I was with accuse me of being an energy miser because I was kind of measuring out what I could do. But that becomes a reality if you have a chronic illness. But even with that, I'm surprised how unconscious I can go. So, you know, I do this in lots of different ways, but I think this is a particular time of year to do this, is to look at how you're spending the energy you do have in each day. And that's not just external activity, of course, it's the internal activity also. If you have a task in front of you that's not the most pleasant task, for you in your preferences, That can take much more energy if you rail about it the whole time you're doing it, of course. And then, of course, there's the question of, are there just certain things you could just set down and walk away from?
Right.
The real question for me is, why, I mean, this is in my own life, is when I get some energy, extra energy, you know, I'm feeling particularly good, why mm-hmm. would I throw that away? Why would I fritter that away? And then we bump up against what we're afraid we might do if we had more. What is our? What's the responsibility if we had more energy, more time, more money, more whatever form of the energy you feel like you want more of? And they do this thing where they look at people across the board in every income bracket, and everybody thinks about 25% more than what they have is what they need, which I find very funny. So it doesn't matter where they are on that scale, kind of thing. That's about pretty much everybody thinks. You know, if I just had about 25% more, everything would be fine.
Wow.
And clearly that doesn't, yeah. So the question is, if you open yourself to this energy of the lengthening light, to consciously bringing it in to your body, your health, your heart, your mind, your spirit, what do you want to do with it? What do you want to dedicate it to? What do you want to consecrate it to? Because consecration is a way of dedicating something to that which is sacred to you. So, you know, for me, the answer to that question is always the same, which is to write more, which is I have these three books that are sort of semi-finished and life interferes in various ways. What surprises me is when I get a little bit of extra energy, whether that's time or, you know, whatever, I don't necessarily instantly go there.
Okay.
I seem to go unconscious about that, especially if somebody else, you know, crosses my path and says, oh, will you do this? And I go, sure.
Right, right.
And I think that happens to, and again, it's about doing good things. It's not that somebody's asking me to do something that I don't have any, has any value for me or whatnot. But to keep that discrimination, because part of the lesson of the solstice is you have this build of energy, and the cycle keeps going. So from that moment on, the light, we begin to get less light as we move around the wheel, right?
Right.
You can't hang on to it. So how are you going to use what you have?
Okay.
And that usually starts with a bit of an audit. You know, how am I using the energy I have right now?
Right. And am I being wasteful in regard to what I really want to do, or am I saying yes when I really want to say no?
Yes. And am I wasting energy being guilty when I say no, or resentful when I say yes? You know, I mean, because even when the yes and no is said, then there's the way that you proceed from there can use a lot of energy or a little energy. And
right.
And you know, it's also, of course, about stepping into some kind of flow, where you feel that you know, it's not just that I have to kind of store up energy in my body and then expend it, collapse and store it up again, which, you know, is a lot of the time how chronic illness can feel. So
right,
it's more
right.
about how do I stay tapped in, and those are about the little things every day. What do I know about myself is the way that I need to get up in the morning if I want really to stay connected to that which gives me energy, or how I go to bed at night, or everything in between, you know. It's more about the how than anything else. What I spend it on, you know, depends on a lot of things. Depends on the needs, does depend to some degree on the needs of the people around me. Whether I have small children or I happen to have two aging parents who have some needs, you know, there are times when we really are called to expend energy. Small children, of course, is the most constant, where energy needs to be expended consistently.
Yes.
In their care, you know.
Yes, and even in your sleep, sometimes that's haunting you.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, but where, when we get to this point of realizing, okay, we have more of this time or more of this energy or even more zest in the day, so would you say that it's a daily prioritizing of where we need to be in that day, as far as, okay, maybe taking a moment in the morning and saying, hey, I'm feeling really good, can get a lot done today. or even saying, hey, I feel really good and it's going to be a selfish day and I'm not going to feel guilty about it. So, you know, in regard to the more light and the more energy, do you feel like it really comes down on an individual and a daily basis rather than kind of a rigid pattern or
yeah.
you know, we have to get this done? Because I know when I go into those have to's, I kind of beat myself up a little bit more.
Right, and that's part of the, you know, there's this interesting balance between this is the plan, and we do make plans because, you know, it often involves other people, and so plans are made so that we actually do arrive at the same movie at the same time that we wanted to see together. and, you know, I mean, so we do make plans, but we also, so there's a necessary flexibility. And I would say you're absolutely right. It's on a daily basis. The thing about the solstices is that it puts it in a bigger container. You know, it's kind of, there are these movements throughout the year, and this becomes the time of blooming. If you look at your life and see what is blooming and what is not, this is the other way to do it, kind of retrospectively, it tells you something about the seeds that you planted or didn't, or the seeds that you nourished, watered, you know, or didn't during the time coming up to this, because you may have had a sort of notion of something that you wanted to plant in the cycle of the spring, but either didn't or did and then forgot to water it, and it's not blooming now. So one of the questions around the solstice, not even just about sort of going forward, is a kind of inventory, just looking at what is blooming in my life, what is full flower in my life, and you know, that could be anything. That could be you know, what's full flowering is conflict in your family.
Oh,
you know,
fun.
Or what's full flowering is, you know, an increased flexibility and ability to discern what will work today for you and what won't. I mean, it's infinite, the possibilities here. But if you want to know kind of what you planted and what you've been nourishing along the way, you look at what's in full bloom. And I'm not suggesting that this is totally in our control. You know, I think about my parents right now. My father's Alzheimer's is in full bloom. There's no doubt about it, you know. And that's not in anybody's immediate control. Believe me, I wish it was, kind of thing. So then it's a looking at that. Some of this is about a reality check. That's the reality right now in with my father that impacts all of the family. And so there may have been other seeds I planted that are not getting watered because I need to put energy in this place, and that's okay. But it does help to at least acknowledge it, to, you know, to not sort of hang on to priorities that maybe there's not enough light and energy for right now because it's got to go somewhere else.
And that's, you know, I'm sure dealing with your father with full-blown Alzheimer's, you have to take it on a day-in and day-out level because you don't know, you know, where his consciousness is on that day, right?
Definitely.
So that's, you know, on a lot of levels, kind of in taking yourself out of the emotional pain of watching that, it's a really powerful lesson in regard to, you know, really appreciating the times we have here that we can utilize to really, you know, do what our soul's longing or path is. And I really liked your reality check point because reality check is that beautiful thing that when you're really truthful with yourself, you can look at your life and you can say, wow, I really slack on that. You know, and okay, because inner dialogue is one of those things that I think either you do it all the time or you're afraid to do it. You need to learn how to do it comfortably.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's a really, you know, for you and I, we probably take it for granted because there's so much inner dialogue that we do with ourselves. You know, it's like we couldn't imagine somebody who doesn't have inner dialogue. However, they do exist. And yeah. And you know, it's almost like that point of getting comfortable with where your thoughts and your ramblings go. Mm-hmm. And you know, even if there is some little, you know, toxic ego aspects of ourselves that come out in our little thoughts and inner dialogue, mm-hmm. it's okay. It's like, this Absolutely. Is a really good time to look at that. Wouldn't you say? This is, you know,
yeah.
like utilizing this. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, I was going to say is I have a sort of thing I do 4 times a year on the solstices and equinoxes where I look at what is actually going on emotionally, mentally, spiritually, sexually in my life. What I miss it? Physically. Yeah, that's interesting. I missed that one when I said them. and the reason why I use that structure a little bit is just for that reason. It because I can blank out entirely on one that I might not be too keen at looking at. Now, one of the things that's interesting about that process is there's a kind of goal setting, but not in the sense of you know, kind of really, not necessarily very concretely, in the sense of I try to set goals that go to essence. So, you know,
right.
I could say, you could have a concrete goal of, you know, I want to double my income. Instead, I would sit in that process and kind of sit with what is that about? What's the essence of what I think a doubled income, let's say, would give me? Or, you know, whatever it is, relationship, place you're living, whatever the concrete thing is. And it might be about security. It might be about being able to be more available for my sons or my parents if they're in need. It might be about being more able to give something in particular. So what I try to do is go to the essence of that because, and I love the title of your show, Unlimited Realities. In the past, I've talked about this as the infinity of solutions.
Right.
So I don't set my intent for the concrete. I set it for the essence, and I leave the shape of that to the universe because I'm not willing to tie the hands of God, the universe, the divine, what, you know, and say, well,
right.
this is the form it has to come in. You know,
right.
So I pray for an alleviation of my father's suffering. I don't know what that would look like. At a certain point, his suffering was alleviated a bit because the disease speeded up. Because he was at the point of not being able to function, but still remembering what he had lost.
So he actually suffered less,
right? So
right.
Now I would never have prayed for let the disease, you know, speed up.
Exactly.
But in fact, that was the way that some of the a bit of the suffering was alleviated. So
wow,
it's about trusting the form.
Yeah.
And allowing that unlimited realities, that infinity of solutions to take place by going to the essence of what it's about for you in any given time. And it's almost always some form of love is the essence of what it's about.
Right.
Whether it's self-love, whether it's love for another, whether it's love for life itself, whether it's an expression of wanting to express more of your love. And I'm using that term in the broadest possible sense.
Right.
So these times of year, you know, and so one of the things that happens is if you do this regularly, and I, of course, being the endless note keeper, you know, write these things down, and you look over, you know, the last couple of years or something, and you see that something keeps coming up, and you've had an idea. Usually when something comes up repeatedly, you have some idea of what that would look like, and you know. You'd like it to go there. And if it doesn't, then the question is, like if it keeps coming up on your list, so to speak, but it's not actually manifesting, one of the questions is this true? Is this something that I really long for at the deepest level, or is it an ideal, something I think I should long for?
Mm.
Or something I think is a good, I think it's a valuable thing, but on a feeling level for myself, it's not holding a lot of value for me. And that's why I'm not planting or watering those seeds. So again,
Go ahead. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off.
Well, it's always about gathering information, in a sense.
Okay.
You know, so if I keep putting down something and it's not happening, one of the questions to ask is, is there an essence of this that I'm not going to that's deeper? And or maybe this just isn't that important to me. Maybe I don't
right.
really want to do it at all.
Right.
you know, and
right.
I think I should. That's why I keep putting it, you know, I keep thinking, yes, this is the way I want to use my energy. But if I don't, I need to ask myself that question.
That's so, it's personally powerful for me because it's probably about the third time I've heard it stated to me, three times in the last couple of days. So I'm really reflecting on your words right now, and it's because I do believe in the conflict of our feelings and our intention. And I really, you know, a lot of times we think we want something or we think we're intending towards a goal. And actually, when we tap into our heart and our feeling center, it's like there's a lot of fear associated with that supposed intention. Or there's a lot of apprehension because we haven't kind of, you know, excavated the crap from the last experience. Like, you know, and so there's some remnants of stuff hanging on there that we don't really identify with in our head sector until we drop into our heart and our feeling sector. And that's, you know, it's like a completely different read. So, you know, that's really, I will be reflecting upon that on my little drive today.
Right. Well, and think about what happens when that's happening is in some ways you're driving with a foot on the gas and a foot on the brake at the same time. One party has a foot on the gas, the other has got a foot on the brake. Is it any wonder we get tired?
Well,
that'll burn an engine out.
And obviously you've been in Florida traffic because there's so many people that I really have to practice what I preach when I get on the roads because I definitely get my my tests there with Florida driving because literally they do drive with a foot on the gas and the brake and it's one of those things like, you know, dude, I'm pretty sure you're kind of paralleling this in your lifetime,
right?
let's choose one side of the road or the other. So,
right.
You know, when we're going through these shifts, okay, we're going through this this energetic shift right now, and we're going through this time of coming into summer solstice and really, you know, embracing the light. You see a lot of people utilizing the light, both at the beach and outside and the outdoors and like you said, you have a gorgeous summer up there in Canada. And what can we do? Do you do anything ritualistically to honor in the solstice? Like for me, a lot of times when it comes for solstice, I may do a burning bowl, or I may have a burning bowl with sage, and you know have some crystals around, and there you know, so there may be different rituals that I go through in honoring different periods. What do you do?
Well, I do a ceremony every day where I smudge with cedar and sage and sweetgrass and lavender as a kind of cleansing and calling out. I do a sacred pipe ceremony, which is a set of 22 prayers, which is really mostly about coming into alignment. It's kind of naming aspects of the seen, unseen worlds in an effort to come into alignment with them. Then there's usually a particular intent. So around the solstice, some solstices I've had very clear ideas about something that I really want to help bring to fruition, and I pull that energy in for that particular purpose. And I might do that in the shamanic tradition I work in. Minerals are the holders of energy, so I might do that very specifically around a particular crystal or stone or, you know, something like that to hold that energy with that very particular intent of how I want to use that, and then have that on my altar so that as time goes on, I reconnect to that intention, that what I want to use the energy for. I've done some ceremonies in groups around the solstice where there is this sort of both a celebration of the light, but also this sense of as this changes immediately afterwards, we're setting sail across the growing darkness to the other side of another solstice a year from now. And so I will often sit with questions around that. What are, you know, if I'm setting sail, so to speak, what are the provisions that I want to bring with me, and what are the ones that at this point in my life I know is just extra baggage. I could leave behind. I don't need that. What's the what are the critical kind of provisions for me to take? And certainly my daily practice is part of that, that's a provision that I take with me. What kind of light do I want to move toward? What holds light for me? A lot of times I'm very aware that discerning where we're to take the next step, whatever that means in our life, is about catching the glimmer. I described it recently to someone who I was doing some counseling with around, is that it's, there's this huge tapestry, and it's catching out of the corner of your eye the thread that really glimmers for you, and following that. And that's purely subjective, assuming that you have, already decided that the tapestry as a whole, we're hoping will promote peace, and love and beauty and all of that good stuff, so we're not wanting to do any harm, etc. Within that, though, again, there's an infinite number of ways that you can participate, that you can weave your own story, your own gifts in. And, a lot of us have multiple gifts that we could offer. The question is, which one really shines for you? It's really subjective. And I think this is one of the areas where often when I work with people, they just don't know. Again, we've got those ideals, an ideal that might say, well, doing healing work directly with people who are ill is more valuable than doing creative work. Or, we have some kind of hierarchy in our head of what's more spiritual or more something. As opposed to, the truth of it is, the thread that glimmers the brightest for you that you follow is the place where you will be able to offer the most to that overall tapestry that we're co-creating together. Everything.
Right.
So doing something else just because you can, but it doesn't hold that subjectively for you. And then the good news is we really are co-creating. So that other thing that you could do, but it really doesn't give you that kind of energy, it doesn't glow in the dark for you, it'll glow in the dark for somebody else.
Right.
If it's actually
part
of the tapestry, it'll glow in the dark for somebody else. So
that's wonderful.
It becomes really... And it's not like you necessarily see the whole picture. That's why I kind of emphasize images like, what are the stones, the little white stones on the path, like see if you can see the next one and walk toward it, or what's the end of that glimmering thread and follow it. We like to think we know where it's going, but I think really by a certain age you've kind of figured out that that's not true.
Surprise!
Yeah. It's okay to think you know where it's going. It can be great fun, but it doesn't have much to do with necessarily where it's going to take you.
No, and it can always switch. And I love analogies, and you have some of the most beautiful analogies. My mind goes into color form when I listen to you. So it's like I really appreciate that. But you brought up a great subject in regard to our gifts and what resonates with us. And something that I've noticed, especially over the last 2 years, I think I've seen more of an increase in it, is that, everyone is trying to find their purpose, their dharma, mm-hmm. their path, their soul, and they may be an accountant by day, and that's paying the bills, but their heart really wants to be, a mystery writer. So, there's all these, there's these inner callings that are calling to us on a soul level, whether we are recognizing it or not. The one thing that I see that's a real fallacy with where people go with this, and it can be the educated as well as those who are, more simplistic in terms of their life and their lifestyle, but people have a tendency to say, want to chuck everything that has been very reliable in their lives for their dream. And a lot of times the dream hasn't manifested yet. It's still in a birthing form. Mm-hmm. And, it's real important that I think people recognize the balance of their lives, that it's okay to keep at maybe their day job while they incorporate mm-hmm. this dream to fruition. Don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. It's like, are you ready to live in poverty while you're pursuing your dream. Because if you're not, you know, think twice. And I'm all for following Dharma and path and spiritual call. But I think that there's a practicality piece and an analytical piece that's really thrown out. You know, when there's so much bashing of the ego, well, in fact, we need that ego to kind of keep us grounded and balanced and to keep us, you know, on path. And it's real important to incorporate that pragmatic practicality in our lives as that fruition and that dream comes to form. So, you know, let's talk a little bit about that in regard to following our path in regard to the light. And, you know, there's things that are starting to wash into our world now, you know, awarenesses and consciousness and collective consciousness and that individualism that we all have. We have different paths. So how can we utilize this beautiful light of the summer solstice to ignite our heart and ignite our dreams and start to get it in a real practicality, maybe listing things? Well, how can we go with that?
Yeah, the first thing is to literally, if you're clear, to the degree you are clear about the essence of what the light that draws you, the glimmer of the thread that draws you. So let's say I'm working as an accountant and I really feel that I have a gift in my hands for healing and I want to set up a practice as an independent healer that people come to. So my first question would be, what's the essence of that healing that I feel like I can bring? Maybe it's a calming, maybe it's a helping people be in their body. I mean, it could be a wide variety of things. And the second question is, how much of that can I live right now in the life I have?
Right.
I mean, do we not need accountants whose presence is healing?
Right, or like really integrity-based, you know?
Right.
Holy Jesus am I looking for.
Right, and what would that look like in the office I work in with the people I work with? Because, you know, because I imagine that if I set up my healing practice separately, I'll be dealing with a rarefied form of human being who is not as annoying as the people in my office. Not true. Not true.
Right.
So, and I'm not saying, you know, never quit your job and go do something else, but the question here really is, I think sometimes we imagine that it's going to require that kind of thing, and then we get into an all-or-nothing position. You know, I have children who are dependent on me, so I can't do that until I can quit my job. And so the first thing is to really look at, I mean, it's very small ways, but for instance, let's say this is not my forte, I've done this work, but, you know, let's say I really feel that through my hands, when I touch people, I really do offer something. What happens if I bring that if I'm a man who works in a business setting and I bring that awareness every time I shake hands with someone that I meet?
Oh, wonderful, wonderful.
Right?
Yes.
So we'd separate these things is part of our problem. The thing about the poverty is interesting because what happened for me, one of the things that happened to me many years ago was I was doing a vision quest on the desert and I was working as a social worker in my day job, and I was doing some teaching of shamanic work in the evening, and I very clearly got a vision of doing the shamanic work full time. And one of the women who was in the lodge that I was running was a body worker, and after that she would get people, because they heard my story, coming in and saying, I'm going to quit my job like Araya did. And she'd always say to them, okay, let's just remember that on that vision quest, Araya got a budget, and I did. So there I am out in the middle of the desert, fasting and praying for 4 days, and as I get this, I get a really clear budget about what it means we're going to live on, my sons and I, because at that time they were quite young, and what that means. I was willing to do that. I mean, I raised my sons in Toronto on $11,000 a year for a long time. That was okay with me. And honestly, after the initial shock of and worry more than shock, to tell you the truth, we didn't feel poor. One time my sons, when they were young, said to me, how come over at Dad's house, how come Dad makes 5 times what you do and at his house we're poor and here we're not? But, you know, that really has to do with personality. I mean,
right.
I'm not selling this as a virtue at all. What I'm trying to be clear about here is, after the initial worriedness about it, I actually didn't feel impoverished because
right.
of my particular subjective feeling values. And that will be different for someone else. I had a friend, someone else, who is a good musician, who tried for a year playing just piano bars, and he hated living on the amount of money he could make like that. He hated it. It took all
right.
the joy of offering his music out of it. So this, there's no, you know, right or wrong. There's a reality check about what it means to live on $11,000 in a very large city.
Yes, right.
So, you know. And there's a reality check with that.
And if you can do it and you're okay with that, it is a perspective. And it is something, you know, your kids, because you didn't project this poverty-based existence, your kids never felt it or saw it. And I'm sure all their needs were met. And, you know, there were compromises, obviously. And,
absolutely.
You know, but this is, it's, you know, it's so interesting you say that. That was a great, again, a great analogy there. But, you know, it's all...
Well, let me tell you about the bite back with this, okay?
Okay, okay.
Okay, because, I mean, just the second layer of challenge with this. So we did this for many years, and that worked and all the rest of it. And then very happily, when the invitations had started to sell, it was great timing because my sons were going off to university and I wanted to help them. They both worked all the way through university, did their 10-year BAs because of it, so they could emerge with a degree without any debt. That's lovely.
Aww.
Now,
yes.
Get this. So now they're 28 and almost 31, and particularly my younger son is doing a lot of his own artwork. So he chooses to work 3 days a week.
Okay.
And he gets up at 5 a.m. every day and works from 5 a.m. till noon. He's very disciplined, more disciplined than his mother has ever been, working on his art. And one day I called him and I sort of said, oh, I need to know this. And he said to me, I would think you, because I was interrupting this time, of all people would get this. The need to, you know, be disciplined about this. But also for him, he makes the money he needs to do what is his priority, which is the art.
Right.
Now, as a mother, okay, so here's where, again, now it's kind of, you know, put your money where your mouth is. This is where the rubber hits the road. I'm very proud of him, and part of me thinks, oh, yeah, but, you know, I get nervous about him doing exactly what I did, right, because I'm his mother. And
right,
because I'm,
I know.
And
uh-huh.
he and his brother are, you know, they did learn budgeting well from me. And they, for instance, make their own laundry soap because apparently it's only 3 cents a load as opposed to when you buy it, which can be up to 30 cents a load. That's
oh,
a choice
impressive.
They make. Yeah, they make that choice. He makes that choice because he wants to do the art. He does not want to get into a job where he feels he'll get used to a level of income that he won't be able to leave to do the art.
Wow.
That's a very conscious choice on his part. But
yes,
I just want you to
incredible.
Hear that as mom,
yeah.
it
right.
makes me nervous.
It's a different perspective. Yeah, right.
I'm
right.
both proud of him and nervous for him.
Right, because it's not you relying on you. You know,
right.
you know if it was you doing it, that there's come hell or high water, you'd figure out a way it
yeah.
would work. Or God forbid, you'd have to go do something, you know, to make it work.
Yep.
But you're, you know, it's that fear as a parent that their needs aren't going to be met.
Right.
Or that they're,
right.
you know, they're going to feel a lack or experience
yes.
that lack.
Yeah.
And, you know, honestly, I'm right there with you. I understand exactly what that feels like when it's your kid because, you know,
yeah.
your resources are there for yourself. You know you
yeah.
can pull on whatever you've got, but it's a whole different scene when it's your kid.
And it's about learning to trust that he's a full-grown man. He's 28
yeah.
years old. You know, he decided to go on a trip or whatnot, and I was all kind of like, oh, really? You know, and he said, Mom, I have enough money in the bank to live for 2 years. Nobody needs to have more than that at my age.
Wow.
Right?
Wow.
And by money in the bank, he means living at this very, you know, kind of in this minimalist way that suits him
right.
and that he feels fine with. He doesn't
right.
want more possessions. He feels it clutters up things. You know,
wow.
so So I have, you know, it's another level of trust for me. If he's a full-grown man, I've given him what I can, and ironically, he followed my lead, and now it makes me nervous.
Yeah, but Oriah, overall, it sounds like you've done a fabulous job, and what a great perspective and insight. I mean, he sounds like he's got it going on, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, there's not much more you can wish for your kids to feel that they actually are not only the fact that he's fulfilling his purpose and his dharma, that in itself is what a gift right there.
Yeah.
But that he recognizes the budgetary concerns. He's bringing in that practicality with the creative intuitive, and there's that balance. You know, he's not off into flake land, you know, living in a cardboard box that he's painted bright colors on the outside.
That's right.
Because it's, you know, he's grounded and he's got shelter and he's got food and he's making compromises. But, you know, those compromises aren't infringing upon his safety or his health or his comfort level, you know.
So, I think that's
phenomenal.
How do you, this, you know, what is your, I have to say, he has a very strong feeling function. He always has. Meaning, and by feeling function, I'm using it in Jungian terms here, of what has value for you subjectively. What has feeling value for you? So
right.
I'm interested that my elder son, who's much more like me, much more of a thinking type in some ways, he works as a manager at McDonald's.
Okay.
And that's what he did throughout university, right? So every once in a while, I kind of give him a little nudge about, you know, what else is he going to do or whatnot. And he describes to me what happens for him in the work that he has. First of all, he works, as you would at McDonald's, with people who are in their first job at minimum wage and a fairly crappy job at that. So it's about, can he train them? Can he support them? But the most interesting thing recently, thankfully they'll never listen to this interview, he'd be shooting me, but... is that there's another manager who's supposedly on the same level as you. There's many layers of managers in this, who was supposed to take on some tasks. And it's clear over time that this other gentleman is not up for the tasks that need to be done. So as my son is trying to train him, things keep falling through the cracks. And most often when the other guy does the task, Brennan's got to redo it. He's got to do it over again, right? So I, mom to the defense here, hearing these stories many times, said to him, you really should just go and tell your boss that this guy is not, he's drawing the same salary, he's doing the same, and he's not doing his share of the responsibilities. And he says to me, Mom, he has five people. He came from India, and he has five people at home who are dependent on him. And my job, my challenge, is to find a way that he can do this job, because he really can't afford to lose it.
What a good guy you've raised, Oriah.
But you know what is a stunning example of is you don't need, and I have nothing against people leaving their jobs and becoming healers or teachers or whatever they want to do, but you don't need to do that
right.
to bring that awareness
right.
to what you do. He's working at McDonald's. You understand what I'm saying here? Like, this is not
yeah,
he's
but he's a manager
media.
Affecting everyone else there. And look at his attitude. I mean, it's the trickle-down effect. It's like, and that's what I love about what you just said. You don't have to, you know, go, you know, live in, you know, as a recluse and be a healer. You can take a very real job as being a manager of McDonald's and make a difference in people's lives.
Right.
And touch those people with your integrity, with your heart, with your, you know, I mean, look at that compassion that he has.
Yeah.
You know?
I was so humbled because I'm telling you, I wasn't there. I was like, getting fired.
He clearly heard myself in the same thing with my daughter. She's a manager of a restaurant, too. And I've said the same thing, and she's come back. And I thought, okay, shut up, Mom. Because you know what? You've raised her to be a compassionate person, and she's teaching you a lesson right now.
Right.
And
he's not trying to just do the other guy's job. He's saying, my challenge is, can I teach him in a way that he can learn how to do this? That's the challenge.
Right.
Not just, I'll just do his job and my job too.
Right.
Right? Can I find a way that he can actually learn this and do this? That's my challenge, you know, kind of thing. So I'm, you know, there's lots of ways that people can bring the essence of what they really want to need. And having said that, if you find yourself in a workplace where it just wears you down so much, because this takes energy, right?
Yes.
And we do have choices about how we use our energy and how much we let our energy be depleted. And we're back, you know, full round to the solstice in terms of this energy is available. How do you want to use it? So if you're
right.
in a place that truly feels toxic to you and you can't do this, I'm not sure I could do what my son is doing in this situation, quite frankly. In fact, if I was a betting woman, I'd be betting on a no on that one. You know, in that context where the work itself is
sure.
not particularly exciting. It's not for a higher – I mean, you know, he has all the qualms we all have about McDonald's food, you know. So, you know, it's not dressed up in that at all, which I think for me would probably be more essential.
Right.
So you have a right to say this isn't a place I can do that, you know, to know yourself well enough. And really see whether it is or not. But not to kind of base that, again, on the ideal, on the idea, but on what actually happens. Can
yes.
you bring more of yourself to wherever you are in your
smallest right.
interactions, right? I think in one of my books I talked about when my dear friend Catherine had the brain aneurysm burst and was in the hospital, and I was going back and forth to the hospital, and one day when the guy in the parking garage asked me how I was, I kind of blurted out all that was happening for my friend who was in a coma. And then several weeks later, as I came through, he recognized me and he said, "How is your friend? Is she doing okay?" I can't
Aww.
Tell you what that did for me in the context of this very difficult situation. And I thought to myself, right, if you're a parking attendant, which heaven
right.
only knows, the boringness of it would challenge me,
right.
you can still bring yourself to these people
yeah.
that you see. And
right.
he did. You know?
Oh, that's wonderful. And this is how, you know, change happens, and this is how love affects others. And
yeah.
you know, this is where we get those little glimmers of that unconditional love. You know,
yeah.
that piece of, we may not be able to maintain unconditional love 24/7, but there's
yeah.
glimmers of it, and there's pieces
Absolutely.
Of it, you know, and that's, and it does. It, you know, I see the ripple effect all the time, and
mm-hmm.
it can be positively, it can be a negative. And, you know, it's the more conscious we are of what we're putting out there and our compassion, it's
mm-hmm.
it's amazing how healing and transformative that is, and not just for us, but everyone else we touch. So
mm-hmm.
that every job is important. I always like the
yeah.
the saying, you know, even if you're a street sweeper, be the best street sweeper you can be.
Yeah.
Because if you're putting your intention and your integrity into that job and you're doing it with a joyful heart, that will radiate out, and others will, you know, they'll see someone, wow, he's a happy street sweeper, you know?
Yeah.
How come, you know, I've got so much more money and so many more toys and I'm miserable, you know? So it
right.
really comes down to that moment of truth within ourselves, you know, are we living our truth? Are we speaking
yeah.
our truth? Are we walking our talk? And we can do it in any profession. It's just a matter
mm-hmm.
of really tapping into that, the truth of it.
Can we be grateful for, I mean, the interdependency thing, and I often think of this when I'm on the highway driving, how much my life is at that moment dependent on scores of other people. All the other
yes.
drivers around me. The people who repair my vehicle. The people who built my vehicle. Right?
Yeah.
Just dependent on so many other people having done their job. And when I really have a flash of that, then I just, you know, sending out a prayer of gratitude to those people. You know, and
yes.
I think that one of the horrible things that happens in a money culture is we think, well, they got paid to do their job. you know what I mean? Like that's
yes.
enough. And it's not enough pretty much for any of us.
Right.
Really, it's, you know, it's
right.
the expression of gratitude. My father was a lineman for Ontario Hydro, and he had such a strong sense when he would go out at 40 below zero when the power was off of
yeah.
how the community depended on what he did. And so
right.
the diminishment of, you know, this hierarchy of occupations we have, whether we're talking about it in a class way, a monetary way, or we're talking about it in a spiritual way, right? Was that
right.
a spiritual job my dad was doing? Well, I'll tell you, at 40 below zero, if your furnace won't come on,
yeah.
You're not looking for a shaman, you're looking for a lineman, you know.
Right. Right.
You know, so yep. Just that component that's there in all kinds, you know, in all kinds of occupations, and the way, I mean, you see it even more in a city than when I lived in the country, because we're so interdependent. I'm so appreciative every time I look around Toronto, especially in the solstice time, for all the trees that are here. And as I get older, maybe, I don't know why this happens, but I get more and more aware of how much work it takes to maintain a large number of trees in a big urban area.
Huh.
The people
yeah.
who specialize in that, who plant them, who trim them so they don't break down in storms, you know, all that kind of stuff. I just get more and more a sense of, wow, that takes a lot of resources on a lot of level, and I'm so grateful that that's where those resources are going.
And that's why it comes to you on that level, because of your gratitude. You know, because of your deep appreciation and gratitude for these trees, you're able to see, you know, the cycle of these trees and what brings it to you in that moment.
Mm-hmm.
And it is dependent upon all these other people. And
yeah.
these people who, you know, so many look at as insignificant because they're just a tree trimmer or they're just a gardener.
Right.
You know, and that's it's such a sad state of perception for
mm-hmm.
our culture when we diminish people's, you know, jobs, because
yes.
there's so, you know, we couldn't exist without the cohabitation and the help, the support from
yeah.
one another in these, whether it's considered a menial job or whether it's, you know, a high-powered, prestigious job, you know,
yeah.
there's this thread, and
yeah.
That gratitude is so important and so underappreciated. You know,
so
we take so
things,
much for granted.
One of the things to do for summer solstice is sit down with something as simple as a fresh piece of fruit. You know, literally the bloom that happens in the time of light. And really, before you eat it, begin to think about all the people who have been involved in getting that fruit to you.
Oh, wonderful.
From the people who planted the seeds for the trees to the people who tend the trees and pick the fruit, you know, the farm workers to the truckers who drive this stuff, you know, I mean, just all
right.
the way down the line. The literally kind of, you know, dozens of people that have been involved in you having the product of this time of light, the fruit, in your hand.
Right. Oh, wonderful.
It changes things a lot, actually, when we can pause and do that for a minute.
And it's also one of those experiences that as we start to have or even become more aware of our own gratitude for simplicity, we seem to expand upon our own gratitude. You know, we
yeah.
start to look at other things that we're grateful and appreciative of and
yeah.
what we've taken for granted.
Yeah.
And, you know, and all of those things. So, you know, as
we... That's right over then into social justice, because the minute I start to become aware of all the people involved, do I want any of those people being paid a substandard living wage?
Right, right.
You know, do I want
right.
my apple at that cost? No, I'm willing to pay more for the apple. I'd like to know that I'm paying more because the farm worker that's picking the apple is getting a living wage.
Right.
So he or she can care for their family and their children also.
That's right. And that's, you know, that's consciousness. That's where our gratitude takes us. It's
yeah.
it's almost like it's a natural flow of opening our consciousness. You know, it's not like we have to go somewhere and buy our consciousness. It's
right.
it's within us all this time. It's basically just having this openness and appreciation and gratitude. Where
yeah.
it expands naturally.
So the
what
question
a wonderful
the
show.
That I would ask also is where do you need to bloom? Where do you want to bloom? Where do you want to let your own light shine? And
okay.
again, that might be in small ways. In this extroverted culture, we think of bloom and shine as fame and fortune versus, you know, I have healing energy in my hand. Somebody may, you know, and that comes out when I stroke my child's back when they're sick. And actually, that energy could be right there consciously when I shake hands with a new business person in my office.
Yes. Yes.
So
I
where
love
does that,
that
blooming want to happen? You know, because it can happen everywhere, really.
That's right, and it does. It's every moment of every day asks us to be present in that that awareness.
Yeah.
So, Oriya, we have 10 seconds. This has been a really wonderful show. Thank you so much for being on. God bless you, and happy
My
solstice,
pleasure.
Everybody.
Thank have
you.
A wonderful
Thank
road
you,
trip.
Thank you. I will. Have a great week. Bye-bye. Take care, everyone.
Bye.